Hi, I'm Terry, Instagram's sassy sober mum. Welcome to my podcast, Sober Stories from Everyday People. Bringing you stories from people just like you and I, the aim of this podcast is to share our experiences with drinking and how we got and stayed successfully sober. Struggling with alcohol isn't just about putting down the drink. It's about learning how to live fully without it. That's where emotional sobriety comes in. I'm Terry, sober since 2019, a certified life coach, the founder of Thrive Sober Coaching and of the Thrive Sober community. I help people not only stop drinking, but remove the desire to drink, so you can build a life that you don't want to escape from. Through one-to-one coaching options of 6 weeks or 100 days, I'll support you to recognize and cope with your emotions, rediscover who you are, and create the freedom and happiness you deserve. If you're ready to go beyond willpower and learn some real practical tools and why you keep getting trapped in the cycle, you can contact me through thrivesobercoaching.com or sassysobermum.com. Hello and welcome to Sober Stories from Everyday People. Today I'm talking to Tom, and he's originally from Bolton, but he's currently living in Leeds, and he's 254 days sober. Thank you so much for joining me, Tom.
Thanks, Terry. Yeah, lovely to be here. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. And so before we go into your story with alcohol, why don't we understand a little bit about who Tom is?
Let's do it. Yeah. So as you kindly already said, my name's Tom. I'm 33 years old. I'm single. Shameless plug to your audience. I'm only joking. I was born in Bolton, and we moved around quite a lot growing up. So my dad was a physio in professional football. As you know, as a football fan, we were talking about this before, Terry. Once the manager gets sacked, predominantly the backroom staff will also get sacked as well. So that when that happened, we obviously had to then relocate to my dad's next job, which meant that I have lived all over the country and kind of moved schools a lot growing up as well, which I think will be kind of relevant to some of the discussion that we have in a little bit. Yeah. But we finally settled in the Lancaster area, and yeah, lived there from probably the age of about 15 or so. Yeah. And following that, I studied in Leeds, I lived in Manchester, I did a 7-year stint down in London, and got to boiling point down there, which then meant I looked to move back up north. I've set up roots here in Leeds now, where I've been for probably 12 months. London is the best place in the world for good drinking, or if you've not got a problem. It's the worst place in the world if you have got a bit of a problem with it. So
yeah,
I'm
sure
we'll come on to that, yeah.
Yeah, so let's talk about that then. So what did your relationship with alcohol look like?
Yeah, so I probably started drinking at the age of around 15, and I'm sure this will be like a familiar kind of theme with a lot of the people that you have on. So probably around like the year, probably I think year 9, yeah. So what's that, 13, 14. And it started with just into the garage, nicking a couple of dad's cans. And I was laughing about this because my dad at the time drank John Smith's.
Yeah.
And for anyone that's tried a John Smith's,
it's quite an old man drink,
isn't it? Worst tasting beer of all time. So I was thinking, did my dad do that as a ploy to try and stop me nicking his cans? I don't know, because he subsequently not drank it since I left. So that's kind of how it started, nicking a few cans, going down to the park, and then just getting up to mischief really with your mates and all that sort of stuff. So I wouldn't say it was like necessarily heavy drinking, but there'd be a few 5 or 6 beers, and then we'd go back to someone's house and it was relatively light and not too intense.
Yeah.
So that probably took me up until the age of about 16. And I remember a friend of mine went on a double date with two girls, and we went for a Chinese, and we were like, what we'll do is we'll wear a dad's shirt and borrow dad's shoes, and then we'll see if we can get into I think it was like a walkabout at the time. So anyway, managed to sneak in, and that was the first experience of like a night out in town. And then we realized, look, we could kind of get in and about. So that was from 16 to 18, which then kind of the drinking got progressively heavier, right? And it's going from drinking beers to then, oh wow, what's a Sambuca? You can set it on fire sound. Do you know what I mean? So like obviously our eyes were opened a little bit with that. I think the interesting thing to mention is with the spirits, what I even as early on as that noticed that it drinking spirits was a very different experience to drinking beers. And for me at that time and that age, looking back now, it's kind of weird for me to even to think about this, but it made me very angry. And I got into a lot of fights at that sort of period between 16 and 18. And embarrassingly, like a lot of the time it was me kind of provoking that, which is like really, really against my nature and always has been. But that was like the first point of like, okay, well, this does something to me different and changes me a little bit. So yeah, I guess that was kind of the experience from 16 to 18-ish. And then at that point, I think you're 18 when you go to uni, are you? I think so,
Yeah,
yeah.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so at that point it was off to university, which things just got dialed up to 10, right? It was, obviously Freshers' Week, and I was in there with a load of lads in a flat, and essentially it was drinking sort of minimum 5 times a week. At that point it kind of became competitive as well, so it was like who can drink the most, and then it was always me drinking the most along with one of my other mates who I won't name. But we were sort of always the biggest drinkers, the last ones out, and essentially just our whole life really at that time revolved around drink and around partying and having fun, and all that sort of stuff. So when you think about it, it's sort of a 3-year experience of the majority of that spent pissed. Like, maybe there's no wonder that some of the kind of repercussions happen or whatever. But
100%.
yeah, so obviously there's a lot more we could go into with that, but I think the key sort of message there is everything from in that period for me in terms of having fun was associated with drink, and not just fun, it was like everything social, everything everything that was kind of interesting and new and exciting. So whatever the occasion, there was always booze involved, I think is kind of what I was trying to say. So that probably took me up until I left university. And then I obviously started my career from that, and I think in hindsight, I wasn't prepared enough for like the transition of, right, you're basically going from a 3-year lad's holiday to now you've got all these responsibilities to just go and live in the corporate world. And to be honest with you, like I didn't transition out of the university mentality. So I was working, still going out 4 or 5 times a week. Obviously your ability to function is a lot higher when you're younger anyway, but you're obviously not working to capacity, right? In any shape or form if you're hungover all the time. So yeah, I think there was a transition period then where, I was still kind of really drinking heavily, but it was still focused around fun. And it still was fun, right? Which is obviously quite important to stay. From there, I then moved to London, the London area, but I actually moved to Windsor. So I'd kind of got to the place in my career where, right, I'm ready to hit the big city and earn shitloads of money. Can I swear? Sorry.
It's fine,
We didn't go through that, did we? Okay. So earn loads of money, so I moved down to Windsor without realizing just how far away it was from the actual city. I found myself in a situation where I was living in a house share on my own. I didn't really have any mates there. Me telling you this is that was maybe a transition to starting to drink on my own, and it probably started with going out with people from work. They left, and then I'd stay out. To then I've got nothing to do on a Thursday night. I'm just going to go out on my own, you know. And it's actually even weird thinking about that, that I just thought that was normal. And also, I actually found it fun. And I don't like thinking about that now. It's like such a strange concept. Like, how are you just going out on your own and finding a night out? But that's maybe, where the transition between, okay, I've got a different relationship with alcohol to other people, because no one else I know does that and would find that fun. So that was quite an interesting period. And then I'd say like the next phase, kind of the final phase, was then moving to London, central London. Now at the time I had a girlfriend, and it was my sort of only long-term relationship, and she'd been consciously aware of my drinking being different throughout this, and had really kind of like, you know, tried to help, and tried to help me probably understand that, you know, some of this stuff isn't acceptable and isn't right. And be honest with you, I didn't listen, you know. So I didn't listen. So I didn't change that sort of mentality of always trying to find another night out, or, you know, leave my own mates and try and find something else more exciting, you know, and all these kind of things that were kind of problematic. And then through that period, so we're talking, I would say, 4 to 2 years ago, like up until that point, things had still been relatively okay. And then I kind of got to the point where I didn't start feeling good. So if I was in 30 grand's worth of debt. You know, my mental health, I started, you know, feelings of depression and all this sort of stuff. And yeah, basically a lot of different factors contributing to me really not being in a good place, work related and direction, and the relationship wasn't good. Obviously, all this debt and stuff, and not really having any sense of purpose, or I think actually not really kind of forgetting who I was. I think I'd completely forgotten who I was and what it was all about. My way of not having to deal with that was to drink more and drink on my own. So then, you know, it was getting to the point where it was literally just a one man band of just getting pissed on my own. Obviously, then that cycle of regret and feeling worse, it then fuels the want to drink even more, and then obviously everything kind of came to rock bottom in a crumbling point. So
I just think that whole culture of bar drinking and, well, drinking at 15, bar drinking at 16, and having access to everything that that brings, and then going straight into that uni drinking, which is heavy drinking, and that's, you know, that affects a lot of young people. You know, I've got friends that said that they really struggled to undo that drinking, and some friends have not still perhaps undone that drinking, you know, that pattern. And I was thinking when you were talking that, you know, what we don't realize is that actually, you know, the brain continues developing all through these years, right? And it's that we, you know, we're not aware of the fact that we don't have that full brain maturity at 16, 17, 18, 19, up until 21, you know? And actually our, you know, brains don't mature until at least mid 20s, but in some cases can be mid to late 20s. And how much that regular drinking, how much that must impact that brain chemistry, and really the limitations that we don't realize that we're doing. Because I was the same, right? I drank heavily through those years too, and I really related to you as well when you were saying that that transition from that kind of quite adolescent drinking, to now I'm in the corporate world, or now I'm just suddenly supposed to be, you know, I walk through that door and I'm an adult, and now I've got all these roles and responsibilities and this, you know, job to, and I'm living in this house. I was in a house share as well. I was laughing when he said Windsor, because I know Windsor quite well, and
And it is very different, Windsor, from London. It's like more, it's like very suburbia, isn't it? Lovely, but very suburbia. And that going into that house share situation, I did the same thing. I don't know whether that was, whether that's really common for that age range, or whether that was just a thing that, yeah, I think when you move around a lot, which I related to as well, you don't have, you have to do those house shares, I think. And I also started drinking on my own in those house shares through boredom, through not being able to sit with my own feelings, not being able to understand the world around me, loneliness, difficulties in childhood, you know, all these things. And so I really related to that. But yeah, I thought it was just kind of like really stood out to me about the brain thing
Yeah.
when you were talking. I just thought,
You know what, Terry, just as you were sort of describing that as well, around the brain chemistry and all that sort of stuff, you got me thinking as well. I think what we can tend to forget, just because of how normalized alcohol and drinking is it's a powerful substance, a really, really powerful substance.
yeah.
So compounded with, okay, if you start that habit and then it becomes a 3-year habit. It's no wonder, okay, as you said, in that 3 years with the brain chemistry and having used and that much of a substance over that period of time, yes. But then it's also like the habits, the familiarness
Yeah.
of it. And I think the only other thing that I'll add there is like what I kind of have to remind myself of as well, and which helps me accept and understand where I am is I just absolutely loved it as well. Like, I think there's an element of me, and maybe we'll come on to this a little bit, but like one of the hardest things for me has been around like having to let go of that being a part of my life because I loved it. Like it was my favorite thing in the whole world to do. But it just got to a point where, okay, there is no way forward for me unless I get rid of it. But which in itself came, you're almost having to like grieve for booze. I was like, I literally have to grieve for this thing that I'm not able to do anymore. So yeah.
Yeah, it is quite
So.
weird, isn't it? And actually, you know, thinking about, you know, what you were saying there, it is a highly addictive drug, essentially.
Yeah.
Let's just call it what it is. It's a highly
Yeah.
addictive drug that's just legalized, and you know, societal conditioning just absolutely adores it. But we're also children. Like, I mean, what other thing would you let children? Well, in what other situation would you let children have access to a highly addictive drug and it just be normalized?
Yes.
It's weird, isn't it, really, when you think about it like that. But yeah, I mean, look, you know, brain conditioning is a thing. We train ourselves to love it. We train ourselves to love it. And no wonder, right? Because I don't know about you, whether you know, you've had any kind of like thought about any ADHD, or whether that's even relevant for you or not. But you know, I've learned on my journey with ADHD that, oh, okay, so my dopamine is really low, and is kind of like always in like low reserves, right? Okay, so then in walks alcohol, which is like lit up like a Christmas tree, and I love novelty and shiny stuff. I'm like the magpie, I want the shiny thing. So yeah, we'll just form a relationship, and oh my God, that relationship will be powerful because it gives me what my brain chemistry already lacks from word go, right? And so even if you don't have the ADHD thing, you can just appreciate how something that gives you a 15 out of 10 high, chemically, how that's going to be a powerful force in your life, especially if you have used it from a young age and you've not developed any healthy coping mechanisms. I'm yet to meet somebody that has that full set of healthy coping mechanisms for
Yeah.
alcohol, to be honest, in my adult life. Like, most people don't have that. So you can, I think the self-compassion thing is very important. I think it's really important to look through the lens of, you know, okay, look, yeah, fair enough. You know, I didn't, you know, drink wasn't great in my life. I didn't have a very good relationship with it. But I always like to think, who does have a good relationship with this, right? Like, There's 7 billion people in the world, and 50% of those people don't drink, right? So, and they're not drinking because they're problematic ex-drinkers or alcoholics. Many, many people choose not to drink, and they live a wonderful, happy, rich, fulfilling life, right?
I think that and that was probably the hardest thing for me was because it was all I knew. Again, in terms of like whether it's going to watch the football, whether it's like actually going out, whether it's a music festival, whether it's like literally taking the dog for a walk, it would bypass a pub. So then it's like the hardest thing for me was, okay, now I've made the decision to remove this. What the hell? How do I have fun? Like literally, how do I have fun? How do I date? How do I make new friends? Like it was weird. And like to be honest, I'm 8 months down the line with it, and I'm still not there. And I think that's really helpful. Or I think it's worth saying is that like, yes, you might be 8 months down the road, or you might be 2 years down the road, or whatever. It's still good. It still can be quite tough, and I think that's one of the things that I've had to learn to focus on is be or try and have your reasons why. Like, don't let them go too far away from your thoughts, because we're crafty people, right? So a long period of time where okay, there's been no problems with the booze. Like maybe I'll be all right again. Maybe I could just go and have one or two. And that was really the process for me of stopping drinking the first time and then getting to a place where, oh my God, I feel great. I feel good again. I feel good. Just having I'll be sound to drink again. And then all of a sudden, like it might be a week or it might be 3 months down the road, it still came to this point where just complete uncontrolled 3 day bender, like up to no good, like take with that what you want. But do you know what I mean? And then so I think it was like what's been helpful for me has been just remembering trying to keep mindful of how bad it was. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I
Has
do.
that made any sense there?
Of course, it made complete sense to me. Yeah, it made complete sense. And I think that's the thing. Like sometimes the road through is it is difficult, and especially when it comes to how do you essentially have to blank canvas your life. You have to go back into life. You have to redesign your life. You have to, not only do you have to redesign it, which feels quite overwhelming and scary because humans love comfort, right? We don't always love change. Like quite often people don't like change, even though we are always changing and things are always changing. We like this place of familiarity and comfort. And so we have to go completely back to basics, redesign the life, but then we have to have this blind faith that actually we'll put all this effort in, we'll do all this hard work, and we will actually get somewhere good.
Yeah, that's so
Who's
true.
to say that that will happen?
No, that's
We have to just hope that that is the case. Now, I feel like I can say quite confidently that it does exist, but it's nuanced. It depends a lot on how much you do maybe change your life, or how much you do pay attention to your thoughts and not let them overrule you, but learn how to witness them and reframe and bring into focus why you're doing this, and complacency, don't let that catch you. And there's all these little facets that I think that it's certainly not a walk in the park, but I think hopefully at some point it gets the scales start to weigh in the favor of there is more good than bad.
Yeah,
Being so
100%, 100%. And thinking about like sort of my own experience with it, I was chatting to a friend of mine actually recently who's thinking about not drinking, and he started, and then he's gone through the process of then drinking again and stopping again. And what I kind of realized for me was like it gets to a point where you no longer have the mental capacity to have to go through that process again of like making the commitment to yourself that I am going to stop drinking, doing it, and then making loads of progress, drinking again, and then having problems with it or whatever, and then having to reset. And you aren't going back to square one, but mentally it does feel like that. And that was probably the point to like, okay, how have I got this 8 months behind me now? Was committed to stop drinking 2 years ago, and probably had four big points or relapses, whatever you want to call them, through that period. And the last time round, I just remember waking up, five wine bottles, God knows whatever else, and a liter of like, empty bottles around me, having just done like 4 months and making so much progress, and literally thinking, I can't go through this again. Do you know what I mean? And a friend of mine who's he's actually into AA, and he actually works with people in his day job doing this sort of stuff. And I used to ring him through that first period and be like, mate, when's it gonna change? And he was like, honestly, you will just know when something is different. And yeah, do
Yeah,
you know?
I think I liken this to you just get fed up of feeling fed up.
That's it.
You get to that point where it's like enough. And for me, it was like a switch that flicked. I mean, I'd had a sober curious relationship with drinking for 10 years. I stopped drinking for 8 months when I was 30.
Right.
I didn't do anything kind of emotional sobriety related. I was just on willpower, right? I was just like, I've gone on a bender. I need to stop. It's going to ruin my life. I'm stopped. But everything around me stayed the same, all the people, all the friends. And I just removed the drinking. I didn't really do anything differently with my life. I didn't do any more deeper, what I would say now is more deeper work, that I've experienced this time around. So anyway, I got to like 8 months in, and I was at it was in early summer. I was at a barbecue with people that love to have a drink and get caned, right? And someone just said, "Have a fucking drink, Terry. You've done this for long enough." And I just went, "Yeah,
Yeah.
okay." And so, but then that then I then spent what I felt like another 8 or 9 years trying to moderate and convince myself that I could bloody do it and that I was okay.
Yeah.
That's painful. That's a painful relationship to have. And then I stopped again for 100 days when I was 30. I think I was probably 39. I'd just broken up. I'd come out of a big relationship. I was a single mom. Life was quite stressful. And I thought, I'm going to fall off the edge of a cliff if I don't stop drinking. 100 days, let's go. And I did 100 days again. Didn't do any stuff, no reading, no podcast. There wasn't really much of that around then anyway, but didn't do a lot. This was kind of back in 2017 time, 2016, 2017. And did 100 days, lost loads of weight, felt good. Best friend's wedding at the time. You're definitely going to drink at the wedding, right? Of course I am. Straight back in. And that was that. Like literally just picked up the reins straight back in to the
Yeah.
drinking I was doing before. And it was only until I again convincing myself I can moderate, I can do this, I know I can get that, I can make the illusion a reality, right? And then I had a big night out with friends, drunk too much, woke up, and just something had shifted. And I thought, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't keep going to these things, thinking I'm going to drink really well, and then I'm blacked out by 6 p.m.
Yeah.
and I can't remember most of the night. And I've got to drive home now, and I've got kids, and I've got a partner who I'm engaged to, and I don't want to I don't want to ruin my life. I don't. This is going to ruin my life. And I just something shifted in me, and I just got to that. Sounds like where you got to. You just knew you had to do something.
Yeah, well, 100%, and I relate to that way you said it's like the convincing of yourself. And I think that was, kind of, one of the you mentioned 100 days, right? So, thinking about my own 100 days, I was actually thinking about this before the call, and there's almost like two parts of that for me, where there's like the what are the 100 days like without acceptance? And then what are the 100 days like with acceptance? And they're two
Two
completely
very
different,
different.
right?
I love
That
that.
that sort of first one, again, I mentioned it before around like literally all I was doing was feeling sorry for myself that I couldn't drink again. I was grieving. I was just being more miserable that I'm kind of like being a bit facetious, but genuinely I couldn't picture what I couldn't imagine life without it. And it was just like constantly thinking of that. And Yeah, still with the hope that I would be able to drink again. And then obviously then, as I said, like once I'd done some of the emotional work, which for me involved like therapy, CBT, counseling, psycho, literally the whole works, things would start to get better. And then that's when the voice in your head's like, oh mate, you're sound again now. Get yourself to the pub, you'll be right. I think it was like the realization that for me, it was the realization that it doesn't matter whether it's a week of being okay to drink or 2 years of like moderating it. Something will happen for me
It's just
that
one.
that just bang and I can't deal with it. And then I revert to default settings of we are getting after it now. And I think that realization of okay, I'm never gonna get rid of that. Then the sort of second 100 days, if you want to call it that, or the different 100 days where I'd accepted that, I honestly found it quite easy, touch wood, in that the acceptance was done and it was like, okay, that is part now. So don't think about the what ifs or maybe this will happen, maybe I'll get better, whatever. No, it's done. So what do I do now? I can move forward. And I think back to like the 100 days of the start of this 8 months, and it came with so much things that previously would have been defaults for me to drink. So like my birthday was 4 days after I made the commitment to not drink, right? So that was the starting point. I got through it. I was like, okay, maybe something's a little bit different here. And then I think 2 weeks later I had my first ever abroad trip with work, and I've traveled constantly over globally over the past 10 years with work. And every trip has been a piss up, right? In some regards, whether you're out with clients or whether you're in a bar after the meeting, just going for some dinner. So it was my first ever meeting with partners where everyone was drinking, and I was like, I'm not doing it. And I'll be honest, Terry, like that was the biggest turning point for me where I got in a taxi after that. It was the most awkward, worst meeting, like social meeting I've had with customers. But I got in that taxi and it's the proudest I think I've ever felt of myself in my life. And then that was really where I was like, I can, this is different now and I can do this. And then since then, I was away in Portugal a couple of weeks ago with my brother and a couple of mates, didn't drink.
Amazing.
So just like these sort of milestones that, I think it's, if you can, if you are going through this process and you're thinking about how can I make it easier, is just focus on the smaller things, like set yourself a smaller goal of, okay, this is something that would have stuck me up, or I would drink in this situation. Let's just try this one little one and then try and get through that. And then the next one, right, might be a bigger one. And I think celebrating your small wins is really important. And yeah, just I think that acceptance piece as well is if you can nail that, then everything becomes much, much easier with how to move forward.
I feel like you let something go when you move into a place of acceptance. Like you let go of that future potential, maybe drink. You let go of that as an option or as an opportunity to go back. Do you know what I mean? You take it off the table essentially. And it was very much like that for me when I entered this stint that I'm in now. I mean, I'll never go back to drinking now, but I very much felt like I'm going to do this. Like I need to learn, and I know that it's going to be uncomfortable, and but it was always like, how do I do it? How do I do it? And I think because for me, I feel quite fortunate now in hindsight, because I mean, I had had those earlier stints where it was different, so it's not like I didn't have the experience of doing it being difficult, going back and the disappointment that brings. Like I had got that knowledge and that those data points, I suppose. A bit like you had those data points from before, and then going back and then feeling really let down, that like you let yourself down. But for me, it was never like, I never had that even 1% of I might go back one day. It was always, this is it, this is my time now. I'm going to take this completely off the table. And I think when you've got that like almost laser focus, it is different. It is a kind of slightly different. It's a shift, isn't it, in the journey, in that you're focused on try to build the tools, and like you said, leaning into the discomfort and just knowing that that's your way through, and almost like not getting caught up with the noise of the like what ifs and do you know what I mean? It's, I don't know,
I do totally.
it's like an energy that you push out into the world, which is a I'm here to crack this, and that's all I'm doing. So the energy of like doubt and maybe that hasn't got a place, you know, that can't get in, it can't penetrate, kind of thing. So, and I don't know what the magic, you know, the magic thing is for that. I don't know how you give somebody that. I do think you have to get to that place yourself. Like I do genuinely think, and I see it as well. I definitely see it in this community where people have perhaps tried again. And you're absolutely right. Sometimes those people, it's almost like they're when they go back after stopping a couple of times, feels unbearable to kind of go back to the start again. And you know, it can be really hard to get your mind in gear, in the right gear. And that's just because you feel like you failed, you know, you did it before and it didn't work. And, you know, you have all that stuff to contend with. But yeah, I think that when you're quite kind of laser focused on what do I need to do because I know I'm going to do it, it's a different energy from
For sure.
maybe I can do this,
Yeah.
perhaps I can get on type.
Yeah, totally. And as you were talking through that, Terry, I was thinking around, okay, what was different for me this last time? And I think the previous times, because again, like I first went to like AA probably, I don't know, 6 years ago, right? So that was the point, you know, even that long ago, there was signs where I should be doing it. But then I think, what was the reason for me going to AA, right? It was because a bad situation had happened with my girlfriend, my ex-girlfriend, and it was almost a way of me showing her
Yeah.
that I'm going to try and get on with it. Did I want to go there? Did I chuff? No, I didn't. Like, was I actually going there for me? No, I wasn't. I was going there to like
Don't fix a problem, sort
try
of.
and fix a problem, but also for someone else, right? And I think that was, you know, that was probably the biggest change this last time, was like I was in my bedroom, there was no one else around me. I didn't tell anyone that this is what I'm gonna do. Oh, I'm gonna go to AA, I'm gonna stop drinking. I didn't tell anyone, I just did it for me. And that's the first time. And I think that was like a really powerful shift in why has this worked? Because it's just for me. And I'm not counting the days, I'm not telling anyone I'm doing this, because this is something that I now want to do for me. And I think if you can get to that place, then it does become an easier process.
I definitely agree with that. I think the first time I stopped drinking, I did it as well for a relationship because, you know, something happened and I didn't really want to do it, but I just felt like I didn't have any choice. I felt like I had to do it, sort of thing. And so for you, how has your life improved stopping drinking?
Like, I guess this is like the golden question that everyone's like, where do I start? Look, I've just got some notes here just so I don't kind of forget everything. Like, where was it? I might delete them. Oh no, biggest gain. Here we go. So I think the biggest thing for me has been like mental calmness, right? Of where I am now, 8 months sober, if like 2 years ago, like it was relentless. Just the voice of negativity and of like worry and anxiety, and like I've got ADHD as well, by the way. I probably should have said that before, but like, so ADHD with anxiety, with all that sort of stuff together, with booze, like my head was just, I was just never not out of my own head. So I think that for me is like the most noticeable thing for me is like I can actually, you know, I was sat on my bed a couple of nights ago. I'd gone to bed and put the phone down, the lights were still on, and I just lied on my bed without realizing for like 15 minutes, but not thinking about anything. Just like, and it's the first time, like, literally caught myself like, I'm actually so relaxed here. Like my thing's quiet. And I was like, this is crazy. Like so crazy. So I'd say like, yeah, definitely like mental calmness. I think the other big thing is resilience is like it sometimes takes getting out of a situation and looking back retrospectively to really truly understand how bad things were. And like, I kind of it got to a place where I didn't see a way forward. I didn't want to be here anymore. And like thinking about all the work that I have put in, I mentioned all this stuff of like obviously sobriety, but like CBT and counseling and coaching and all this sort of stuff, and like going through all that work. And actually the bigger thing is having had to make really big and important decisions, which for my whole life I've been so scared of making. And like actually making these decisions, okay, the relationship isn't working out, and that was mutual, but that was a big decision. Leaving London where all my mates were, moving back in with my mum and dad at 30, right? Of like, I just need to get away somewhere remote in the countryside to have the peace and have the time. So I think like having made those really hard decisions and sticking with the process and sticking with the commitment, now being able to retrospectively be proud of what I've done and know that like actually I'm now grateful for all of this shit and all of these shit experiences, because one, it's made me who I am now, but also knowing that actually, I was laughing with a friend, he's potentially getting made redundant now. I've been in that process like a couple of times before. And also thinking about a job redundancy compared to what I've had to do to get to this place, walk in the park. So like I think the resilience that you can take from going through the process is amazing, and I wouldn't have any of that without sobriety. Obviously the ones that you me and you were talking about, CrossFit, you're a CrossFitter, I'm massive on the gym. So yeah, best sort of physical health and shape that I've been in probably my whole life. What else? I mean, I was in 30 grand's worth of debt, in a 2 year period since going sober. I've paid all that off. I've got enough saved now for whatever the next chapter is for me or whatever. So like the financial side has been amazing. But I think the other big thing for me has been the opportunities that going sober has created. And there's so many different sort of levels or layers to that. The opportunity to actually be a better man and a better guy. And what I mean by that is I'm a better family member. When I was drinking, my mum would be lucky to get a call, once a month. I'm constantly in there with the family group chat. Family's the most important thing to me as well. So like, being a better friend, a better family member. But for me as well now, the opportunity to help others. So the biggest thing that really made an impact on my depression and understanding all of this stuff out of all those things of CBT coaching, etc. Sorry, medication, all that sort of, was coaching. So I had a really positive experience with that because it's much more forward thinking as opposed to dwelling in the past, which I think, was much more suited to me. So I've since like gone and got trained on that.
Amazing. I was just thinking actually, like you would make such a good coach. I was just
Oh, no way.
having
No,
that
oh, thanks,
thought.
Dave.
Yeah, I was going to
Thanks,
ask you
Dave.
if that was on your radar, so.
Yeah, no, so I had wonderful experience. I've got trained through a company called Barefoot, like ICF accredited. So why? Because like I can now, I've got the tools and the experiences to use all of this negative stuff and feelings and experiences to potentially help others. What a great opportunity that is. And would I have that opportunity if I was still pissed? No. Like, would I have even got the qualification? No. Would I? Where would a bit of God knows,
I know, don't.
doesn't bear thinking about, right?
Wild,
Sort
yeah.
of knowing. So there's so much that I've gained. The one thing that I will say, because I think it is important, is what I'm still struggling with, and again, this is for me 8 months in, is have I fully filled the gap of the gap alcohol was filling? What do I mean by that is, because alcohol was if you think about the gap as 100%, alcohol was 90%. So Yes, I've found like new little hobbies. I've gone all in with the gym and these few different things, but I think I need to be more proactive about putting myself in new situations or new hobbies, or which are going to be uncomfortable as well. And I think I need to be better at doing that because of just how big that gap was in my life. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah, it does. I think this is a very ADHD thing as well, in that we like everything yesterday. Thank you very much. So, we're very wired for instant gratification as well. And I think that, that has pros and cons, right? Like for you, it sounds like the pros have been massive in that you've had this huge turning point and have been able to really passionately invest in yourself, change, grow, and all that stuff. And I relate to that so deeply. I'm exactly the same. But then there's also, I find sometimes with my ADHD, there is a sense of wanting to achieve everything, everything, everything now, quickly, quickly, and I'm constantly trying to check in with myself and trying to reassure myself that sometimes time is the best thing that we need. So you need to do all the things, right? And it's really important, but it is, I do see that it's a relationship as well of time. So for me, when I was a year sober, and then I got to 2 years sober, 1 year to 2 year was so different, right? Because like in year two, I felt like I kind of went a little bit more into, I went into a different level, in myself. And then 2 to 3 was completely different, and then 3 to 4, and I realized that we evolve every year. We're evolving and we change. Like how I am today to how I was when I first stopped drinking is still completely different. And I know that I've still got so much more to learn and develop and get good at. And what I have to try and practice is, it's okay, Terry, you don't have to do all of that now, kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? It's like that, but I know that I'm enthusiastic about it, and I'm really, really enthusiastic. So I think that for you, I think it's amazing. Your journey has been amazing, and what you've talked about in just this episode alone is just, it's so inspiring and it's phenomenal, really. And then on top of that, you've also done this wonderful thing where you've got, a qualification, and you're able to start sharing some of that with the world, which I think coaching is amazing for that. Like, I'm not saying that therapy is not great, but it is different, right? And I understand what you mean. I love the blend of being able to hold space for people to talk about what they need to talk about and to help them see a different perspective, but to also give them some ideas and creativity and some tools that they can implement and put into practice and really notice changes from week on week, like really big, ginormous shifts, right? And I feel like sometimes that, it's slower when you go down a different road with therapy. Again, not saying that therapy is not great, because I've had therapy and it was really helpful, but it is a lot more retrospective and reflective. And a therapist is not going to tell you to go and do this, and this, whereas a coach kind of can tell you to do that, if they, do you know what I mean? It's slightly different, but the blend is great. And so I think that's a long way of me saying that I genuinely believe that sometimes it is almost just a journey of letting things sort of sink in at their pace and letting that evolvement, which will always happen right up until your very last day on earth, letting that kind of settle into place and allowing space in that too, is my point, I think. That's something I have to coach myself on quite a lot, because I think that it's easy to think, right, well, I should be doing this now, and I should be doing that, and I should be doing this. And it's what they call very masculine energy, which of course you are, but you are a
I know
masculine.
your viewers can't see that. I've got a big shiny bald head, so I definitely
Yeah,
feel some masculine element.
but I'm very much, I'm often in my masculine energy as well, and I'm trying to learn, like, we both, like men and women, both have masculine and feminine energy. And the masculine energy is very like do, and better, do it better, and get this, do that, and but, Whereas the feminine is more kind of like slow, let that thing sink in, let something unfold, like it will all unfold in the way that it's meant to. And I'm sure that that's going to be the
Yeah.
same for you as
Do you know
well.
what, Terry? That's really interesting. That I've not actually heard that before. But if I think about like what has, if I look at me from the uni days and even quite a bit post that, and then me the last 18 months, then that sort of, I don't think I had any feminine energy back then, and now certainly I've got that, or some of that, because just taking your foot off the gas a little bit of what do I need to be doing, and like where am I in my life versus where other people are, and like all of this sort of stuff which we all get sucked into. Like social media is the worst for it, and like and even outside of that, just from your own ambitions of where you thought you maybe should be or where you would like to be, and you're not there yet, and all this sort of stuff is like. Guys, like, for me, I'm 33. I've still got a long, long time. Hopefully, touch wood, a long time to achieve that. So it's like, okay, here's where you are right now. What is where you are today better than it was a couple of years ago? Flipping 10 times. Okay, so you're doing all right. And I think like the more you kind of let go of those expectations, actually, weirdly, the more some of the things that you kind of want will find a way to you in a different way.
Make space for it, I think. And I
Yeah.
think I can be very guilty of trying to manufacture too much,
So true.
try to
Yeah.
make too much happen. And I don't know where that comes from. I think that is, a bit ADHD for sure. But also, I just think I've had a lot of corporate career before now as well. And corporate conditioning is very like, do better. 100% is not enough. We need 110%. Not sure how we can actually really achieve that, but it working sales, that's a thing. 125%, 150%. And I've been conditioned in my career as well to be a high achiever. And I just think that there's all those messages always around us. I see it in the school gates. I heard the other day there was this little kid who was about 7, and she's like, "Mummy, mummy, can I have a chocolate something?" And mummy says, "Oh, we'll have to see how good your swimming is tonight." And then
Yeah.
parent, like, no, not throwing shade on her, right? But that's all of this subtle conditioning is constantly pushing us and stretching us to maybe in a lot of cases further than we really want to go, right? Or at least at that particular time. And so I've got three neurodivergent kids as well, and I've got a child in burnout who stopped going to school, and I've learned a lot, a lot more about this sort of stuff, and I'm paying a lot more attention to what do I say, and how do we communicate with each other and with our kids, and what are the expectations like? Because when I have women coming to coach with me, I see that they're coming to undo so much of that conditioning, that high achievement conditioning, that high expectations conditioning, that but it's just so fascinating. I feel like we spend a lot of early life trying to create these human beings to be somewhere up here,
Yeah.
in the sky, and then they spend the majority of their life trying to come down from it, but in a way that they don't feel so much self-shame and they don't feel so shit about it. So I don't know, I think there's a lot in trying to trust the process, having the vision, having that clear intention, but also allowing space and allowing yourself to go slow. It's like for me, I've been wanting to write a book for years, and then every now and then I get really annoyed at myself and tell myself off for not writing the book. And then
Yeah.
it's like, and then I just think, no, hang on, the book is in me. I know the book is already in there, but it's just for some reason, there's just not quite the right time. And I think there's that feeling of, but will it ever be the right time? And it's just trusting that, yes, one day it will be the right time, but it's just not the right time right now, kind of thing.
Yeah. No, I really relate to that, and kind of thinking about, okay, with that in mind, like why hasn't it worked for me in the past, right? So as an example, like I do it every year. I go home for Christmas and I'm like, right, okay, what is my next year going to look like? Right? Get the pen and paper out. The obviously sees the light of day once,
Goals.
right? Yeah. But then I start writing, okay, well, I'd love to do this. And then before you know it, ADHD kicks in or like whatever it is, and you've got a list of 30 things, right? That is just completely unachievable, right? So I think, where have I, you know, in the last year, been able to make a difference or do it differently, is like this year was, there was two things on the list. It was become a coach, like get accredited, and set, have enough money for a house deposit, and sort of taking away the other stuff, which was kind of fluffy stuff of like, have a coaching website or blah, 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 you know, all this sort of stuff. Like, just forget all that. That stuff will happen. But what are the two things that like I really want to achieve over a longer period of time? And then you can kind of be more adaptable with how you get there, you know, knowing that there's going to be certain priorities and work kicks in or kids kick in or whatever. So yeah, maybe that's Tom's tip of the day.
Yeah, there we go. And that links beautifully onto what would be your top three tips.
Hey, love that, love that, seamless. So top three tips then on staying sober. I've put number one, no booze in the house, and I think this is maybe probably slightly more towards those who have maybe more of a problem. I don't know if that's the right way of saying it, but if you are looking to stay sober, what's the easiest, quickest way? Not easiest, but what's a relatively quick fix for a big reward or big impact is just get rid of it out of the house. Don't have it in, because then the friction, you're removing the friction, right? Of how easy is it to go to the cupboard and pick up a can or pour a vodka, right? It's 5 seconds. How easy is it to then make the decision to get your shoes on, get your coat on, get in the car, drive to Sainsbury's, decide what booze you want, buy the booze, come back, take your shoes off, take your coat off, pour a drink. There's so many more steps to that. So I think that's a really high impact way of making a difference. I think the second one, I did mention this before, but I think it's been the biggest one for me, is consistently checking in with your reasons why you've made the decision to be sober. So for me, that was, you know, it doesn't matter what it is for me, actually. We've kind of been through that, right? But I think being mindful of your reasons why, whatever that is for you, whether it's family, whether it's for yourself, whether it's for whatever, just as a daily thing, just keep that present, and then it becomes way easier. The other side of that, for someone that maybe has really gone through it, is don't forget how bad it was. I think, interestingly, we talked about the 100 days. How difficult was that, or how was that experience? For me, the real hard work started after the 100 days. When for me, when I've made the commitment to do this challenge, right? So I actually find stuff like that more easier. It's when, okay, I've done the challenge of the 100 days and I'm feeling good about myself, then that's when we get crafty with ourselves and say, ah, you'll be fine, mate. And they're the moments to really stop and remember, how bad was my life when I was drinking? And by the way, it will come to you pretty quickly. It was fucking shite, right? So I'd say, just don't keep, you know what I mean? Keep that as at top of mind. And then the third one, and I would say, like, probably the yes, it's to do with staying sober, but it's absolutely everything, is physical exercise. You know, what was one of the biggest helpers for me, like, you know, I was deeply depressed, getting over the depression, the anxiety. And so the physical exercise for me, it was lifting weights. Loads of people love running. If you don't like doing stuff on your own, there's CrossFit classes like you go to, Terry. There's so much stuff out there. And what that also does is it's instilling consistency, because unless you're being consistent with the gym, you're not going to see any proper results or changes. And then through that, you're learning to do hard stuff, which is the discipline part, which the commitment to being sober, if you've had a problem, it requires a hell of a lot of discipline. So by doing the physical exercises, you're actually doing these great changes to your body and your mind, but you're also, without realizing, subconsciously helping build your discipline for the staying sober. So I would say they're sort of my top three.
Love it. Yeah, brilliant. Really good. Really, really nice, clear ideas there. And I think that, you know, that don't forget how bad it was, that, you know, that fading effect bias, it can really catch you out It can really cut you out, and it's almost, I think it's just lurking in there. They say it's 12 to 24 months really to get the alcohol back.
Don't say that. I'm only 8 months in, Terry. Is it?
But
12 to
that's not to say that you can't have more highs than lows, right? That's
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah,
there's context there in the in terms of like neuroplasticity and the rewiring of the brain. It's a 12 to 24 month
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
And then
but in that 12 to 24 months, you can feel amazing and be glowing just like you are, and have like all these really quite positive stories. Yeah, of course, challenges from time to time, but as is there always is with things that are really important that we want to achieve, there are always hard things. Like, I've just started CrossFit. Look at me, we're talking about CrossFit as if I'm some kind of pro. I've literally been 2 weeks.
you were telling me you were a pro before we went live.
Yeah, I know. I just like I'm getting myself into pro mindset.
Yeah, I love that. Manifest it.
I said to the trainer today, I was like, I think I've got a championship CrossFitter
I'm backing you. I'm backing you.
in me. He looked at me like, oh my God, who is this? Who is
Good to
this woman
know.
in her late 40s? Bless her. But yeah, I mean, anything worth achieving is just hard, isn't it? It's new, it's different, it's hard sometimes. So, but I think that yeah, it's a 12 to 24 month thing. But that fading effect bias, that being able to remember the drinking in a positive way, unfortunately, our brain records the good bits of our drinking in the kind of like the more robust area of our memory than the bad bits. So we don't often, it's harder to remember the bad bits unless we really sit and think about it, because the good bits are at the top of the pile, if you like. That's the way that the brain records this stuff, which is also like not going in our favor. Thank you very
Yeah.
much, brain. And that's where that fading effect bias comes in. That's why sometimes, you can get 8, 9, 10 or whatever, weeks or months down the line and be like, was it bad? Was it really that bad? And
Yeah.
so, that's why I think also as well, like having that education around that and reading those books or listening to podcasts like the Huberman Lab. Not sure if you've listened to that one, but
Yeah.
They're really good for helping you to understand some of that more brain chemistry side of things. Just to, you're not doing anything wrong if you have these sorts of thoughts. It is just the journey of trying
Yeah,
to, unplug conditioning.
so true, Terry, and I think actually that's maybe a nice way for me to sort of round up from my side is like what you've just positioned there with the brain chemistry and again like the plastic neuroplasticity and all this sort of stuff is alongside the fact that guys, alcohol is a powerful drug, right? Anyone that is going through the ringer a little bit at the minute with it, or is struggling, or is not in a good place. Give yourself a little bit of kindness, or take the pressure off a little bit, because your brain, you can't control how your brain's wired. And also, we're talking about really, really powerful stuff. So of course, they're gonna make us think crazy, or make us think differently, or act differently. So give yourself a little bit of kindness. But then what has to come from you is the commitment to actually doing the hard work and to making the changes. But there's so much support out there now. Obviously, you got a great thing going with this podcast. We've talked about CBT therapy coaching. You know, there's so many resources. So if someone is struggling with this, talk to someone, whether that's a friend or a family member, and you will get better. If you really want to change, you will change, and your life will be so much better without it.
Lovely. How can we find you, Tom? Where do we find you on social media or
Yeah, so we're talking about the website thing, weren't we? I was supposed to have it built for this and in time for this. It's not done yet. So my Instagram handle is Tom.
Show yourself some kindness, Tom. Show yourself
Yeah, didn't
some
you?
kindness.
Fine, it's okay. You'll laugh when it happens. So my Instagram handle is TomLeather92. I will, we'll maybe there'll be a website by the time this goes live. But as I said, like my sort of what I'm doing is maybe more focused on men.
Nice.
So if there is anyone that's listening who's a man and is kind of wants some advice, whether it's the coaching stuff or just someone to chat to. There's anything that's resonated in here, I'm open for a DM and just a conversation. So yeah, find me that way and stay tuned, I guess.
Yeah, that's so nice. And thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a really wonderful conversation. I feel like we could have chatted for
You
ages.
too.
There's a lot of ideas bouncing and a lot of similarities. And yeah, and I just think from my side, I'm always truly grateful for an open-hearted guy coming on the show and sharing their experience and being vulnerable and candid. And because I do really feel like these kinds of conversations, do help other people, but especially, helping other guys where guys might not feel as comfortable perhaps talking about this stuff with friends. I don't know. I'm not a man, obviously. I'm not trying to do a sweeping generalization, but I just think that it's important to have male voices on the show, and so I'm grateful for you for that. So thank you.
No, absolutely, and thanks for having me on. It's been a great conversation, and I've really enjoyed it. Yeah, so thanks, Terry.
Oh, good. That's good. Good to hear. And thank you to everyone else. Until next time, goodbye.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you're interested in being a guest, please contact me directly on Instagram by sending a message to @sassysobermum. You can also find helpful tools and resources on my website, sassysobermum.com. If you enjoyed the podcast and you want to spread the love, please like, share, and rate the podcast. I really look forward to next time. See you then.